Good afternoon. It's a minute before 12. 45 degrees up here on Signal Hill, 90% humidity. Northeast wind is 17 miles an hour blowing with 6 miles of visibility at the airport. You're tuned in to Public Radio KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM live on the web at kmxt.org with translators in the villages at K269AW Larson Bay, K269AX Carla, K269AY Akiak, K269AZ Old Harbor, and K220AU in Port Lyons. Showers today before 4 p.m. and then rain after that. High near 50. East winds 20 to 25 miles an hour. 80% chance of it raining today. Tonight, more rain likely before 10 p.m. Showers after that. Cloudy skies, low around 43. Northeast winds 15 to 20 with a 60% chance of precipitation. Saturday for the plant sale. Showers likely before 10 in the morning, then rain after that between 10 and 1. Cloudy skies, high near 50 again. Northeast winds 10 to 15 with a 70% chance of rain. We're still getting a forecast for partly sunny skies for Mother's Day, though, with a high near 51. Southeast winds drop down 5 to 10 miles an hour. So Mother's Day might be great. It always is going to be great. Doesn't matter what the weather is going to be doing. This afternoon in Chiniac Bay, east winds at 20 knots, 7-foot seas and rain. Tonight, east 20, 7-foot seas down to 4 feet after midnight with rain showers. Tomorrow, Saturday, northeast winds of 15, diminishing to 10 in the afternoon, 4-foot seas, rain showers. Mother's Day, south 10, 3-foot seas. Small craft advisory today in Marmot Bay. We got east winds at 25, 10-foot seas, widespread rain. East 20, 7-foot seas and rain tonight. NPR headlines.
NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Lawyers for Richard Bright, the government scientist who was removed as head of a vaccine development department, say government investigators found reasonable grounds that Bright faced retaliation when he declined to promote unproven treatments for COVID-19 patients. In a statement, Bright's attorneys say the Office of Special Counsel will request that the Department of Health and Human Services stay the former director's removal. The OSC says it cannot confirm or deny that development. Bright filed a whistleblower complaint with the OSC earlier this week, alleging he was reassigned after he raised concerns about committing resources to drugs like hydroxychloroquine, for which President Trump had frequently voiced support. The Supreme Court's temporarily suspending the release of redacted grand jury material from the Mueller-Russia investigation to a House panel. NPR's Brian Naylor reports the Trump administration is trying to block its release.
Last October, a district court judge ruled the Justice Department had to turn over the materials, which were blacked out of the Mueller Commission's report, into Russian interference in the 2016 election. An appeals court upheld the decision, but the Trump administration, hoping to keep the materials secret, appealed to the Supreme Court. Now, Chief Justice John Roberts is temporarily blocking the redacted information's release while the full court determines what action to take. Lawyers for the House Judiciary Committee have until May 18th to file their response to the Justice Department's attempt to withhold the materials. Brian Naylor, NPR News.
The Georgia Bureau of Investigation says two white men arrested in the fatal shooting of Ahmaud Arbery won't be charged with a hate crime. Arbery was fatally shot in February while jogging in South Georgia. Member station WABE's Emily Green reports.
Gregory and Travis McMichael were arrested and charged with murder and aggravated assault late Thursday. But Georgia is one of four states without a hate crime statute. The director of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, Vic Reynolds, tells reporters that public pressure didn't play a role in the decision to arrest McMichaels.
Regardless of the amount of social media, regardless of the amount of the mainstream media attention, regardless of the emotion, none of that matters to the GBI.
Reynolds left open the possibility of more arrests in the case. For NPR News, I'm Emily Green in Atlanta.
The pressure to reopen the U.S. economy in the middle of a public health emergency is underscored by today's report out of the Labor Department. More than 20 million people lost their jobs in April because of the economic shutdown, and the unemployment rate in April shot up to 14.7%, level not seen since the Great Depression. TD Ameritrade's J.J. Keenahan says no sector was spared.
Those losses started with the travel and hospitality industries being absolutely decimated.
As recently as February, the jobless rate was as low as 3.5% before coronavirus took hold in the United States. But the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 455 points at the close, or nearly 2% at 24,331. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero-gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
In this new age of limited social interactions, there is a lot to get used to. There is new guidelines to follow, changes to business and class schedules, and hurdles to once routine tasks like picking up groceries or getting a haircut. Kodiak's mental health community says it's normal to feel like it's difficult to function right now. Here's Heidi Barrett, a counselor at Kodiak Community Health Center.
I think people need to remember that these are stressful times and to kind of give ourselves a break, you know, to lower our expectations a little bit. We're all dealing with so many changes and things are so different. And this isn't a time to really be beating ourselves up because we're not doing enough or being down on ourselves because we're not doing things as well as we think we should.
Barrett said parents in particular might be struggling right now with homeschooling and round-the-clock care for their kids. And she says the pandemic is also likely to hit hard for people with past trauma in their lives. She said feeling emotional, overwhelmed, or angry is normal right now, and it might be a sign to get some extra support. Encouraging people to seek behavioral health support from KCHC or any of the other clinics in town. Therapy doesn't have to be a big undertaking, she says.
People sometimes just need some very focused problem-solving skills, some skills to help them relax, and even just kind of common sense information.
Barrett said treatment is never one size fits all, but there are some things she suggests for everyone, like getting outside more, reducing social media use, and not focusing too heavily on the news. She also recommends that families cooped up together build in some alone time for each person to make constantly being around one another a bit easier. The governor's administration has filed a nearly $500 million request for federal support for the state's transportation needs. But as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, critics say it prioritizes highways and bridges over fixing the state's aging ferry fleet.
Back in February, the governor held a press conference focused solely on Alaska's ferry system. The fleet's last operating mainliner had just broken down, causing what would be a nearly six-week shutdown of regional service.
We are doing everything we can to work on fixing this issue and, like I said, coming together to come up with a sustainable solution that's going to go forward for many years.
Asked about using federal highway dollars available for maintenance and repairs, the governor deferred to Transportation Commissioner John McKinnon, who pointed to the agency's statewide transportation improvement program called the STIP.
Look at the STIP, and that will show you where we're putting federal funds into ports and ship repairs.
It's a four-year plan to leverage nearly $500 million in federal funding to pay for state transportation needs. Think of it as a wish list the state draws up to spend federal money. And under that program, the federal government pays about 90% of each project, whether it's a road, bridge, or ferry boat. But there are strings attached. More on that in a minute. As part of the deal, the state gets a pot of federal money that has to be spent on ferries. It's nearly $17 million a year for the entire fleet. But the state can also spend other federal funds on the ships too. Only according to the STIP approved in late April, it doesn't plan to.
By not asking for enough money to maintain the fleet, it's an indicator of what their intentions are.
That's Dave Kenzinger. He's on the steering committee of the Alaska Marine Highway Reform Project. It seeks to remake the Marine Highway as a public corporation with more autonomy, rather than an arm of the state's Department of Transportation. He says it's clear from reading the state's plan for those federal dollars that it isn't prioritizing ferries.
When you have a fleet where the majority of the vessels are between 45 and 58 years old, if you want to keep them running, you have to have an active maintenance program. And it's more than active maintenance. You actually have to spend real money on them if you want to keep them operating.
To be clear, this isn't a huge change from the way federal funds were spent on the Marine Highway in previous years. Data provided by the state agency shows the ferry system has received, on average, about $21 million annually in federal funding over the last decade. But the STIP projects the state putting less than that into the ferries going forward over the next 4 years. DOT's Program Development Director, Ben White, says the drop is due to other critical projects across the state.
We have more needs in the state for infrastructure than we have available federal funding, so we're having to stretch the federal dollar further and further.
He says the STIP is often amended, meaning the state can redirect federal funds. His agency is working on an amendment now, but details won't be out until summer. Commissioner John McKinnon has cited another key reason why more federal dollars aren't being leveraged for ferries. There are strings attached. Federally funded projects have to be put out to a nationwide competitive bid.
Annual overhauls are done at the Ketchikan shipyard. They're done with state funds. If they were to be done with federal funds, we'd have to write up a much bigger design and contract, put it out to bid, and the work very possibly would go to Seattle or Portland. Probably not in our best interests.
There's strong support in the legislature for keeping money in state, but some coastal legislators say that the fleet needs more money now to keep it running, federal or otherwise. Senator Jesse Keel is a Juneau Democrat who's argued for more ferry funding across the board.
And sometimes that means opening up that competitive bid without an Alaska bidder's preference. We can absolutely keep Ketchikan Ship and Dry Dock humming and still do the best job of managing Alaska's finances and fixing our vessels.
And there's another wrinkle. Alaska has two public ferry systems, the Marine Highway and the Inter-Island Ferry that runs between Ketchikan and Prince of Wales Island. This year, the Inter-Island Ferry was left out of the four-year STIP, despite warnings it'll need about $6 million to keep its two ships running. The Department of Transportation has said that the Inter-Island Ferry will get the money it needs, but it may be from the pot of money set aside for the Marine Highway, and that would mean even less for repairs and upkeep for the Alaska Marine Highway System's fleet. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
If you're one of thousands of Alaskans waiting to hear from the Small Business Administration about an economic injury disaster loan, Senator Lisa Murkowski says you should take a look at the 10-digit number you were assigned when you submitted your application.
If you have that 10-digit number beginning with a 3, you are in the queue for processing of your loan.
If you do not have a number, or if yours begins with a numeral that is not a 3, Murkowski has some bad news. The SBA isn't taking any new EIDL applications unless you work in agriculture. Murkowski isn't happy with that decision. She also told constituents during a telephone town hall meeting yesterday that she does not know when the agency will decide the outcome of the applications it is currently processing.
I could not receive any assurances in terms of the timeliness on this. You are frustrated about this program. Your delegation is equally frustrated.
EIDL is the smaller of two big coronavirus relief programs in the CARES Act to help small businesses. Aside from a low-interest loan, EIDL offered applicants up to $10,000 as a grant. More than two decades of ocean sampling by the University of Alaska research vessel Siku Liak in the Gulf of Alaska will remain uninterrupted by the coronavirus pandemic. The Siku Liak's 2020 sailing started out of Seward this week. It's pared down a little bit from what's usually a two-week mission to one, and with fewer researchers on board. One of those is Chief Scientist Rush Hopcroft, Professor of Oceanography at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Hopcroft said there were some extra logistics and special permissions for the cruise this year. But as he told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove, conducting the research every spring is fundamentally important for our understanding of the ocean off Alaska's coast.
The whole marine ecosystem is really set up to take advantage of something we call the spring bloom, which is when the light comes back and the water starts to warm up and suddenly the small algae, the phytoplankton in the system, explode. And then all sorts of organisms have their life cycle kind of expecting that to happen and are designed to take advantage of it. And missing observations in the spring, it's not just that you've missed that spring. You've kind of missed being able to understand, if you get out and sample later in the year, why the year is the way it is. And there's a carryover from year to year as well. So not knowing what happens one spring means you can't really see the full way that it's connected to the year before or after it.
What does this research actually look like when you're out there? What's the route that you're on, and sort of what's the process that you're going through?
Well, the longest part of the time series is a line of 15 stations that starts at the mouth of Resurrection Bay, south of Seward, and goes out to about 50 miles past the shelf break. So it's a 150 nautical mile line that we take casts. We run instruments down on a piece of sampling equipment that also can collect water. We profile the whole water column to determine physical parameters like temperature and salinity and the nutrients that fuel the algal growth and a whole series of other parameters. And then we also collect the zooplankton by pulling butterfly nets through the water that are designed to catch different nets designed to capture different components of the zooplankton.
A lot of different things have been put on hold because of the coronavirus pandemic, and I understand that this research cruise had to go through a couple extra hoops to be able to go this year. Did you have to get sort of special permission to do it?
To some degree, the system has, at the state level, has recognized that certain aspects of research are, in fact, not something you can put off, that they're effectively a critical service or critical science. So that latitude has been allowed by the university to execute science when it can be done in a way that mitigates or greatly reduces the risk of anyone contracting the virus. So that was the one piece of it. And then it was also convincing the university's vessel, the Kuliak, that we would be able to take as many actions as possible to make the situation low risk, that we would reduce how many people were going on the cruise, that we'd stop people from having to share rooms or bathrooms during the cruise, that we would be able to have a minimal number of people in any space at a time. But we've all been in quarantine, both the scientists and the crew, for at least 14 days. The likelihood of something actually coming onto the ship remains extremely small.
Sounds like you're going to be pretty busy, but you know, I wonder, with all the tourist cruises shut down, are you going to have time to do anything like shuffleboard on the deck to sort of, you know, stand in solidarity with them?
Yeah, unfortunately, the research vessels don't have a shuffleboard area, and they don't have a bar either, so, or swimming pool. So it does cut down on kind of what we could do with a recreational time.
Yeah. I guess you've cut down on the time of the cruise, so you're going to be just like twice as busy probably, huh?
Yeah, and we've reduced what would normally be 24 scientists. There's three of us going. So we're going to have our hands completely full. And we know we can get the really important core observations done, but of course we're always going to be trying to do just that little bit more of some of the other things we'd like to do but don't need to do. So we're going to be pushing ourselves to the limits.
Thanks, Casey. Many Alaskans are feeling stressed and anxious during the coronavirus pandemic, but a virtual series of UAC and Yuktun sessions from a teacher who grew up in the Bristol Bay region, apologize for that if I hack that, aim to connect people even as they are physically apart, KDLG's Izzy Ross reports.
You always want to first start on your right-hand side. You're going the world out there. The world in here, we dance it.
That's Utka Kalutzik-Snyder. She's teaching Yorok traditional dancing and singing, and this particular dance is called Klamta Nunani Khuti, Our World's Inner Beauty. Kalutzik-Snyder grew up in Dillingham and Aleknagik. Now she lives in Anchorage and works as the Culture Camp Project Director at the Bristol Bay Native Corporation. She had a lot of plans for this year, including piloting its first culture camp.
And that had to be placed on hold due to COVID-19.
Since people aren't able to get together in person, she says they are finding ways to get together virtually. BBNC created a Facebook group to host virtual Yurok and Yurtun sessions. It's called Bristol Bay Amkhazka, Bristol Bay Nakanka.
Kazkik is Yurtun and Sukhstun, referring to community house, and Nakanka is Dena'ina for our house. And so as a part of this page, we plan to provide a number of resources, and one of those is our virtual Yurok sessions.
Kalutzik-Snyder says that Yurok is a way for Yupik people to celebrate their way of life and connect with each other. It's an expression of their culture and history, their way of telling stories. And she says Yurok encompasses more than just the English translation of dance, which is most familiar to non-natives.
Yurok has a way of grounding us. It's a way of prayer. It's a connection with our ancestors and our heritage. And it's really amazing how refreshed and rejuvenated I feel after Yurok. And it certainly helps for me to relieve stress.
The classes are a way to engage with local culture, and everyone can participate. The sessions take place every Friday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. One of the first dances Ilutzik Snyder is teaching is the one we played earlier, Kramta Nunanichutti. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Salmon permit values plummet. More after this.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Your CSF purchases will help U.S. fishing towns thrive. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
The value of Alaska salmon permits is another casualty of the coronavirus, with prices dropping for all fisheries across the state. There are more permits for sale than ever.
There's so much uncertainty about, even if there will be a season here and there, and if there is a season, what kind of a price can we expect?
Doug Bowen runs Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer.
I can't think of one salmon permit that has gone up in value. And if there are different permit values that have not gone down, it's simply because they're not selling.
Prices for the bellwether drift net permits at Bristol Bay are all over the place, Bowen says, but well below last year's high of $195,000.
They've sold for as low as in the $150,000 range, so dropped by $40,000 anyway. And then maybe the next one sells. We just sold one recently for $165,000. And so they're sort of all over the map, but the trend is unmistakable. It's down.
Another eye-raising twist at Bristol Bay is how many permits are listed as emergency medical transfers for lease in the $18,000 to $25,000 range.
It's just a temporary arrangement here that on a permit, someone else can go out and use your permit temporarily for the season. And this year, we're seeing more folks just use the COVID-19 as a reason for transferring their permit or their quota.
The upturned food market has more processors talking about canning salmon this summer to fill the need for shelf-stable proteins. Bowen says it's anyone's guess if or when the more lucrative restaurant trade will return.
The concern about the season, concern about the price, I think that's why you see so many permits on the market.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMSI instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Got a couple of messages. One is a lost vest. It's a lost black, found on Pillar Mountain, a black vest. If it's yours, 539-6429, if you think it's yours. And a reminder, there's free cloth masks available until 1 o'clock today if you go to the front door at the auditorium next door. Weather in Kodiak today, 45 degrees, foggy, misty, 90% humidity now. Northeast wind has picked up a bit to the 17 miles. Visibility is sticking at 6 miles out at the airport right now. Today's showers before 4, then rain likely after that. High near 50, east winds 20 to 25. Chance of precipitation is at 80%. Drops down to 60% tonight, but rain still likely before 10. Showers after that, cloudy skies, low around 43, with northeast winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. Showers tomorrow before 10 in the morning, then rain after that between 10 and 1. Cloudy skies, a high near 50, northeast winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. 70% chance of rain tomorrow, too. Sunny, partly sunny on Mother's Day with a high near 51, northeast or southeast winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. It's the 8th of May, 6:01, sun came up, goes down at 10:14, 16 hours, 14 minutes of daylight, 4 minutes and 24 second daylight gain, 65 the high in 1961, 27 1971 the low. Synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters issued at 4 this morning. A front over the northern Gulf will weaken in place and dissipate by this afternoon. Second front enters the southern Gulf this afternoon, then moves into Kodiak Island this evening. High pressure builds into the Gulf Saturday night. Barren Islands East gale warning today. East 35, diminishing 25 this afternoon with 17-foot seas. East 30, 13-foot seas rain tonight. Northeast 25, 11-foot seas Saturday. Marmon Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory through Saturday. East 25, 15-foot seas today. East 30, 13-foot seas tonight. Northeast 20 with 11-foot seas on Saturday. Chiniac Bay today, east 20, 7-foot seas rain. East 20, 7-foot seas down to 4 feet after midnight tonight. Rain showers, northeast 15, diminishing to 10 in the afternoon. 4-foot seas, rain showers. Saturday, Sunday, south 10, 3-foot seas. Marmot Bay, small craft advisory today. East 25, 10-foot seas, widespread rain showers. East 20, 7-foot seas, rain tonight. Northeast 20, 5-foot seas, Saturday. Southeast 15, 3-foot seas, Sunday. Shelikof Strait, gale warning today. Northeast 35, 15-foot seas and rain. Northeast 30, 12-foot seas and rain tonight. Northeast 25, 10-foot seas on Saturday. Kodiak District, next tide's a high tide at 4 o'clock this afternoon, about an 8-footer. Evening low tide's a little after 9, a 1-footer. On the west side, the high tide's at 4:15 this afternoon, 16 and a quarter feet. And the evening low tide's at 10 o'clock, minus 0.06 feet. A couple of announcements. The scholarship for folks in need is due today, your application. You have to send in an application and a photo ID with a Kodiak address received by today, kodiakcommunity.org. Library's having some events next week, so I can tell you that. If you're driving in and out of town, just make sure you're aware there's road construction that's going to already started this week and going to last through the end of the summer. So watch out for signs, particularly now between the airport and Bell's Flats. If you need a cloth mask, there's one available today. Kodiak City Council is going to have a work session. We'll broadcast here Tuesday night and follow that up with a regular meeting on Thursday night that we'll be broadcasting. And then there's Zoom committee meetings for the History Museum, Mindful Mornings on Zoom on the 23rd at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's kind of far in the way, so I'll tell you that. And finally, community fundraiser for us, Kodiak Public Broadcasting, in time for Mother's Day from 10 to noon tomorrow at 1223 West Kuskoff. If you have questions or if you have plans, call Marion 539-5009.